You're tuned into Soul Connection, hosted by Zenobia Todd, ASYEP intern, and Sarah Fedishin of the Aspen Hope Center. You have probably heard the term, we are all connected. Humans are social species that are wired to connect. Love and belonging are our greatest needs. Our goal is to facilitate meaningful conversations on what we all need to find wellness.
Stay tuned to listen to experts in the mental health field talk about the changing landscape of mental health and what remains true to basic human needs. We will also spend time sharing stories, experiences, and ideas we have learned along the way.
Please join us and enjoy some connection time.
Soul Connection is sponsored by the Aspen Hope Center. The Aspen Hope Center provides an array of mental health services such as crisis intervention, suicide prevention, mobile crisis response, therapy, a confidential 24/7 hope line, and a robust school-based program. To learn more about the Aspen Hope Center, you can go to aspenhopecenter.org. Thank you.
Okay, welcome back to Soul Connection. It's Zenobia and Sarah here, and today we have a very special guest. Can you introduce yourself, Eric?
I sure can. It's Eric DeRosa from Snowmass Village, just up the road about 30 miles or so from where we're recording right now. And just wanted to thank you, Zenobia and Sarah, so much for having me. Megan, great to see you again.
Thank you so much for coming. So starting off, I just want to know like what you do, where you come from, and kind of just all the main basic things.
Sure. So I grew up, I'm 52 now, grew up in the early 70s on the East Coast in Massachusetts in a very small town, very close to the Rhode Island border. Went to school outside of Boston where I met my girlfriend, now wife. We've been together since 1992. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah,
we followed each other around. Thank you. And moved to New York City in 1993, where I spent 18 years in the finance world. I was an investment banker slash derivatives trader for quite a while. And my wife and I, with our two cats, decided enough was enough in 2011 and moved here to Snowmass Village, where I taught skiing full-time for Aspen Skiing Company. And through this past season and now, I'm dedicating myself full-time to my company, From Survivor to Thriver, which is a podcast. I'm also an author, a public speaker, and currently working on, behind the scenes, building a ski program for people both here in the Valley and around the world.
Wow.
That's awesome. I didn't know all of that. So what made you so curious about mental health and wanting to lean into that space with your podcast?
Great question. Thank you, Sarah. Mm-hmm. So my own personal lived experience and my own journey, which as far back as I can remember, around the age of 7, I suffered with severe anxiety and obsessive compulsive disorder and never told anybody until I was 33 years old. And that was in the late summer of 2004 when I suffered my first of two dissociative episodes, very much along the lines of a psychotic break. And that was the first time when the outside world knew what was actually happening with me on the inside and couldn't hide it anymore. My wife, who I had hid it from for a very long time, knew. And so I started to see a therapist, started to take medication, and began my healing journey, which also included skiing. So it was a little bit of everything. And we hit the pandemic, and I was coming back from vacation in November of 2020, and I was starting to spiral a little bit. And I thought when I landed back home here in Colorado that if I was experiencing that, and I had the tools, and I had the resources, and I knew what to do to take care of my own mental health, I could only imagine what other people out there must be going through. And so I approached my good friend, Mark Fernandes, who grew up about 9 miles away from me, and he and I didn't meet until I moved out here to Colorado in 2011. And I approached him about the idea of the two of us starting a podcast together. Mark's been through his own mental health journey as well. And so at the time, we thought, you know, let's give this thing a shot. And it was all about, first and foremost, helping other people. Most importantly, shattering the stigma around mental health conversations, helping empower voices, especially for people who have not yet felt like their voice has been heard. And as we say now, building a community of thrivers.
Wow. Thank you so much for sharing that. And I'm also someone that's passionate about talking about mental health. And obviously I have this, which is called Soul Connection. So,
yes.
Yeah. And I met you actually at one of the roundtable meetings. And those are like one of my favorite, you know, events that ASYEP holds. And so it's really special that you came on here and are sharing all of these things, because I've been through my fair share of things and you have too. And I think it's so important to make it known and talk about things that many people really struggle with talking about.
Yeah, thanks for saying that, Zenobia. You know, it's really important that nowadays, you know, we let other people know that they're not alone.
Yeah.
And it was amazing being at the roundtable back in November and getting to not only see some familiar faces, but what was really, you know, important to me and what I was struck by, you know, was seeing so many teenagers sitting around the table and speaking openly and honestly and in a vulnerable way about their own, you know, mental health struggles and things they were going through. And I thought in those moments when we were there, like what it was like for me, you know, in the 70s and 80s. It was something we never even spoke about. It was so stigmatized. And, you know, it made me so happy to know that this generation can speak openly and honestly, and has that support network there, whether it's friends or family or other loved ones. It's, you know, we've come a long way. We have a tremendous amount of work still to do. You know, I'm excited about, you know, being a person in that space, hoping that I can, you know, help to influence and get other people speaking as well. But, you know, kudos to you you know, I think back to when I was in high school and, you know, all I wanted to do was keep it hidden from the world because I thought I was different and broken and, you know, unfixable.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I don't know. I think it's all so, so important. And I think the world is getting scarier, but I think that this is one aspect that's getting so much more beautiful and like open. And I'm really thankful because just in the past few years, I've come out of trauma. And so I'm really thankful that I have such an amazing like community. I have this and I have amazing friends and I'm always meeting new people and talking about it. And so I think a really important aspect of this world, which is destigmatizing. Yeah, I think that's just important and I'm really happy that's happening. So,
and I just wanted to say, you know, what you just said is so very important because so many people talk about what's going on with teenagers nowadays and social media and all the downsides and all the negatives. And to hear you talk about the positives of your generation and speaking about mental health and the people that support you, you know, I can't stress it enough, right? We only hear a lot of the negatives and the horror stories. And, you know, voices like yours need to be heard. They need to be heard loudly because there are so many amazing young people doing so many great things in the mental health space.
Thank you for saying that. Zenobia is a leader in her own right, and it's awesome to spend time with her and hear what she's up to. So I'm curious, who is your mental health hero? Who, and this doesn't have to be a famous person or just someone in your life that maybe did something or said something that got you curious and maybe a little more confident about taking this path.
Sure. So it's going to be actually an interesting person because this person spoke about it, his addiction issues and his recovery issues and his mental health struggles. But ultimately, you know, the pain was too great for him and he took his own life. It's Anthony Bourdain. And he is, you know, truly one of my heroes. And one of the things he really had this uncanny ability to do was to bring people together. And so many people who watched his show over the years or read his books, I think, came away thinking, you know, it's all about food. And the reality was for him, food was what brought people together. It was all about the conversation. And he was able to have conversations with people in some of the most far out lands and far out places, people who had absolutely nothing in common. And he could bring them together and get them talking. And in his later years, as he became more and more open about his opioid addiction and some of the pain and the struggles he was going through, you know, I saw somebody who was kind of just like me, you know, just a guy, bunch of tattoos, and who wasn't really sure where he fit in, and was kind of quiet and you know, humble, and unfortunately, you know, as I said, the pain became too great for him, and he took his life. And so a lot of the work that I do is so that other people just like him, you know, might find a reason to just hang on for that extra 30 seconds in order to change their thought pattern, or just stay with us for one extra day, because it does get better, and there's hope and there's help and there's a way through. But yeah, he I would say was definitely one of the real big influences on what got me started, you know, speaking so openly in the mental health space.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. I haven't heard Anthony Bourdain's name in so long, but my dad loved him, and he had his cookbooks and everything. And I remember when that happened, and it was really sad. And so I think that's really cool that that's one of your heroes, because he was a really cool guy.
He was.
Yeah.
And in fact, my wife and I, in June of 2022, you know, we love France and have spent a lot of time there, especially when we lived on the East Coast. And when we were in Paris, we had been in Bordeaux, went up to Paris, and there was a hotel that Anthony had stayed in during one of his visits to Paris. He did an episode, and it's called Le Hotel, which means the hotel in French. Mm-hmm. It was where Oscar Wilde stayed in his last days, and did a lot of absinthe. And there was a really cool episode. And I thought, wow, if I ever get the chance when I'm over there to stay in the hotel. So my wife and I did that. And the whole time I was there, you know, I just kept thinking about that episode and, you know, just walking the streets of Paris and going from, you know, local restaurant to local cafe, and just how magical it really was. And, you know, it inspired me when I came back to start writing more and doing even more in that space. So I kind of felt like his spirit was over there following me around.
Aw, I love that. Mm-hmm. Thanks for sharing that. That's cool. So kind of transitioning, I want to know, how do you define success in your field?
Sure. So from the very first day that we recorded the podcast episode, Mark and I sat down and I said, success for us is if we can change the trajectory of one person's journey. Check the box, job done. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because I now know a lot of people in the podcast space, and people are always asking, you know, how many downloads do you have and how many listeners and how many this and that, and what are all your metrics? And I take a step back, and the first thing I say is, all those things are cool and I know what those are, but what's most important to me are the lives that I can impact.
Yeah.
And to hear stories and get DMs and have people email and tell us about a very specific episode or something that resonated with them, that got them to see a therapist or that got them to speak to somebody. Or, you know, we've had a lot of people on our show who, you know, are in recovery, and to hear stories of people who had hit rock bottom and never thought that they were going to be able to, you know, have a successful recovery journey. I've had people come up to me and say, you know, that episode really helped me turn things around. And so for me, that's how I measure success.
That's a really beautiful thing. And that's one of the best feelings. Like, even just like minorly helping someone is the best feeling. So I'm sure that you feel amazing after that.
And oh, it's so, yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm a pretty, it's funny. My wife is going to be listening to this. I'm actually, I guess they would say, an introverted extrovert. And so a lot of people who know me closely know me to be extroverted, but I'm pretty shy, and it is still really weird when somebody will come up to me in City Market or in Clark's and say, "Hey, I just want to let you know I listen to the show, and you know, either my kids or my husband or my wife or somebody, really resonated with that episode." And I kind of stand there for a second, and I think this thing that I thought was only going to be listened to by my friends, or the book that I wrote that I thought, right, I was going to read it, my editor was going to read it, and that was it.
Yeah.
It's out there. And,
exactly.
And it resonates with people, and it's still really strange for me, but I get a big smile. I'm smiling right now just thinking about
it. I know exactly who you feel, because I've been doing like this for like, I don't know, a while, and like not as long as you, and not every week, but still I get people like asking me and telling me and asking questions about my show and telling me, I know, like exactly what you said, and it's such a good feeling, and I love it, and it makes me so happy that like people get something out of it. So
and I can tell you, you know, being a community member here in the Roaring Fork Valley, and being, you know, a two or three generations, you know, before you, I remember when you were like, "Oh, I'd love to have you on the show." Like even hearing like the younger generations being, you know, connecting and resonating with the message, and makes you feel cool for a second, I guess.
Yeah.
But you're doing amazing things. And
thank you.
Keep it going.
I know. I feel cool that Zenobia keeps wanting to hang out with me each month and do this show. It makes me feel good, too.
I feel like I should start rolling up the sleeves.
Right?
Tattoos out.
So Zenobia and I have been talking about youth and how we are worried about young people and mental health. And, you know, I think we're kind of stuck between we understand COVID. We understand these stressors that now face us as a culture. And, you know, I guess I'm curious to hear what's coming up in your podcast. What are themes that maybe you're catching on to? And also, you know, we think about maybe we are breaking down the stigma and people are just feeling more comfortable to talk about these things, whereas in the past, you know, people did keep that to themselves.
Thanks for that question, Sarah. So when I think about some of the topics that have really resonated with our audience, when we have teens on, it's really amazing. Our teen mental health podcasts, whether it's teens talking about, attempts that they've made and being thankful that they didn't, and all the great things that, you know, they've now been able to live for. We've done some episodes around teens in the LGBTQ community and how challenging it can be coming out as a teenager. And as you had said, in today's society, not only challenging coming out as a teenager, but once you come out, in many ways in today's society, your mental health of, you know, not having to keep that secret anymore, right, the weight's off your shoulders, but now you're in a world where your physical safety is threatened. And so, you know, we're looking at the mental health impacts of, right, physical safety within the LGBTQ community. We've got a really cool special episode that we're actually recording tomorrow night. And it's with another friend of mine up in Montana, and he does something very similar about shattering the stigma, and we're going to speak specifically about mountain towns and the impact of living in mountain towns and what it's like living in a mountain town and mental health and weaving in the whole idea of, you know, being outside and skiing and how skiing can be so healing and can create such a sense of belonging for people. And I would say for me, that's, you know, having stepped away from teaching skiing a few months ago, you know, being out on the snow for me is the place. It's my place. And wanting to do so much to show other people how healing that can be, to have more episodes around, you know, what it's like for people in our communities and resources and things that they can do to, you know, to help and who they can speak to. And so, it's been a fun ride when I think back to all the different topics we've talked about and all the different ones that are to come. Zenobia is going to be on. She just doesn't know it yet.
I'm happy to be on.
But for me, it's really about, you know, however we can get that message across and get the conversation going, whether it's through parents listening, through teens listening, or, you know, then, you know, they're both listening to the same episode and mm-hmm. thinking something completely different out of it. We've had that experience as well.
Yeah, well, I can connect with that so much. And I think it's really cool you're going to talk about growing up in mountain towns, because I'm so thankful that I grew up where I did. I was born and raised in Glenwood. And like, it's like I can like I understand skiing so much as like being your therapy and like being like your comfort place, because I don't know, on the round table conversation. Yeah, I talked about I talked about how I was excited to go skiing and how like it saves me in a way, and like it's just so comforting, and like I love growing up in the mountains. And I talked about spirituality on one of my past soul connection episodes. And I talked about how like nature is something that really is like my therapy. Like, I mean, yes, I've sat down in front of someone at therapy, but my version of it that honestly helps even more, in my opinion, is like being in lakes and skiing and like, and just being outside. So I can totally relate with that.
That's so insightful that you brought that up and talking about sitting across from a therapist, just like we're sitting across from each other in a room now and we're chatting. There's something that's so different when you do that in kind of a four-walled setting versus when you actually do that, you're sitting on, you know, chairlifts or for me, hiking the bowl. I know for a lot of people, hiking to the top of the bowl is a chore.
Yeah.
And I try to take each and every moment in when I'm up there and looking around and, you know, just remembering like where I am and being in the present and, you know, finding some amazing line to ski down. And it just puts me in this place where I can't be worried about what happened yesterday, and I can't be thinking about, you know, all the potential things that, you know, I can dream up that might go wrong, you know, throughout the rest of the day, because we all know what happens when we're skiing, and especially when it's consequential, and when our mind starts to really wander, we're on the ground, and so that's a lot of what I'm, you know, going to be doing in the next few years is taking what I learned in a 12-year career as an instructor, and really taking that experience piece of it and bringing that to people to show them that skiing, it's not about how we ski or it's not about how we look when we ski. It's the experience and what you feel when you ski.
Yeah.
And you were talking, you know, about the spirituality of it. And sometimes I just need to dip into the trees and, you know, stop for a second and look around and, you know, ground myself and take some deep breaths. And in many ways, being on snow is as important a therapy for me as actually sitting across from my therapist and having that conversation.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think real quick, I think that goes back to what you said about Anthony Bourdain, actually, because his thing wasn't just food. It was bringing people together. And I feel like what we're talking about now is skiing, but it's so much more than that. So I just thought those two things kind of.
Yeah, no, you're so right.
Went together.
And I just think about your show, right? I mean, you have the word connection in there. And that, I think, is what so many people are struggling with, whether we're in a mountain town, whether we're in, you know, New York City, where, you know, when I lived there, people used to say, you know, there are 8 million people and it's the loneliest place on the planet. Mm-hmm. It's this idea of connection and community and feeling as though like you're part of it and that you have your five, right? Your ride or die. We had pods during COVID, and I think that taught a lot of people, you know, who are the people that I really want to surround myself with? Who are these people that have my back and that I can really tell my deepest and darkest secrets and get vulnerable with and share and know they're not going to judge?
Absolutely. Yeah. That's important.
Well, I'm curious just because, you know, we're a radio show and all that. What music helps your mental health? What do you listen to when you need to get out of a funk?
Great question. So I can tell you, on the way down here from Snowmass, I was listening to Dua Lipa. And then right before I pulled in here, I threw on a 90s punk station. So I went from Dua Lipa to Green Day and Offspring. Mm-hmm. One of the things my therapist actually had me do a few years ago was make a joyful playlist. And so what I had to actually do was go through all of my Apple Store, Apple iTunes, whatever they used to call it, all of my songs. And I came up with like a playlist of 25 songs, which if I put that on, you know, it's everything from Franti to Jack Johnson to a good friend of mine, Kaylee Rose, who's a Billboard performing artist as well. And it just brings a smile to my face. And then she also had me create a fight back playlist. Ooh. So as I'm coming out of kind of, you know, the dark period, and it's got a lot of rap, NWA. Yeah, I was a big NWA fan when I was in college. And it's just music that, you know, motivates me to realize, like, I'm going to power through this and I'm going to fight back and come through. So, yeah, my tastes are very, very eclectic and are all over the map. So
yeah. No, me too. I think, yeah, music is such a beautiful thing and it's gotten me through so much. So that's awesome.
You know, all I do know is my own lived experience. Each person has their own individual story, and it's like a fingerprint. It's unique to each and every one of us. And so really just wanting to learn and to grow. And it's the same with, you know, my writing or, you know, when I'm public speaking, one of the first things I do is, you know, when I get off the stage or I've, you know, finished writing a draft, I show it to my wife or one of my friends and I ask them, like, what could I have done better? What could I have changed? Like, how does that sound? You know, it's wanting that feedback and wanting to grow from it and not wanting to just stay in one place and just keep delivering that same message in the same old way.
Yeah. Well, I guess that wraps it up. thank you for coming on today. Yeah.
Thanks. Yeah, we really appreciate this. This was really fun and it went by really fast.
I know.
You might,
I know.
Would you come back again?
Oh, I would absolutely.
I think
love
we
to come
could.
Back.
I know. I want you to come back because that's awesome. Yes. All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you guys so much.